first of all. And yeah, I think, you know, obviously the thing I'm going to talk about today is 2 weeks ago or so, maybe three actually, I got back from staying for 2 months at the Cresto Mountain Zen Center. And when I was trying to figure out how to give this talk, it was actually pretty challenging because, you know, at the monastery, at the Zen Center, there's not a lot of distinct moments that really stand out from the crowd. Really, the value of it seems to be in the consistent schedule, and you know, there was so much going on that if I tried to pick any one thing, it would fail. So I think the best place to start, or I've decided the best place I'm going to start, is actually at the beginning of my stay there, which is, you know, the first day when I showed up. And I showed up sometime in the evening at like 6 or 7. I had someone to give me a tour and like to get me oriented, because I needed to figure out where I was going to stay, and I needed to get acquainted with the schedule and figure out what was going on. And that person, for whatever reason, happened to be in a rush that day, so they had to meet with friends. So my orientation was kind of running around from place to place. And by the end of it, I had no idea what was going on. I felt like, oh God, I am in for it. I don't know which building is which. I don't know really where to go. The only thing that I did know for sure, because it was heavily emphasized, was be at the Zendo, the meditation hall, by 15 minutes before 5, because I had to get a spot. So everyone has their own spot in the meditation hall, and I had to be assigned. So meditation normally starts at 5, and people usually wake up at 4:30 in the morning, but I ended up waking up a few minutes early just to make sure I had enough time. And I got there, you know, 15 minutes before, where I was welcomed by one of the senior practitioners who kind of showed me around, gave me a little bit of an intro. And then, you know, at that point I felt pretty good. I was like, okay, I'm in my comfort zone. I have to meditate, and we're going to do walking meditation. It felt very reminiscent of what, you know, we do here and what we've done in show in the past. But little did I know, every service that they do, they have a sutra service, or every meditation in the morning that they do, they have a sutra service afterwards. So as soon as the final walking meditation wrapped up, or the final meditation actually, which by the way, were long. It was a 50 minute period and then a 40 minute period with 10 minutes of walking in between. So that was hard enough, but simple, you know, you just sit. When the service started, it was, again, I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. It felt like I was back in show for the first time, you know, missing the bows and creating too much space in front of the person that I was walking behind, you know. It just was like everything I was doing felt like it felt like I was in a completely new world almost. Even though I've done this for, you know, 2 years now or so, it was really refreshing in a lot of ways. There was one point even where I don't know why I did this. I should have known better, but I was so into one of the sutras that I actually closed my eyes. And during that time, people went from, you know, sitting in cross-legged to actually being on their knees, kneeling. And I opened my eyes. I didn't know when it had happened, but I was like, oh God. So it was just constant. The theme from that morning, at least, was regular failure, regular small mistakes that I was pretty nervous about because I was new and I didn't know. You know, there were more forms there than there we have. You know, there's consistent bowing throughout the sutra service that we don't do. There's full pronations, I think is what they're called, which is where you start from standing and then you go all the way down to the ground and tap your head on the ground. I didn't know to tap my head for at least a month. They didn't tell me that. Someone tapped me on the shoulder one day after meditation and said, hey, you know, you're supposed to tap your head on the ground 3 times for the 3 jewels. But if this sounds confusing, it's because it is. There's a lot. But at the end of meditation, when we walked out of the meditation hall and we were go, I think there was a work meeting afterwards or something like that. The one thing I definitely expected was for someone to come up to me and say, like, hey, here's where you really dropped the ball. You know, I was really expecting someone to say something like, you know, you messed up here, here, and here. Maybe work on that. But there was none of that. No advice was given. So that was interesting. That was a really interesting response. And it was something that proved to be, there was very little direction given, as little as possible. And I guess I'll start with the next story then. So that was my first day. And after that, things went somewhat smoothly. I mean, they went better. I was meeting new people and it was a little bit stressful, but it was fine. So the next story I think I'll tell is over time. So there was the daily schedule of after meditation, we would eat breakfast, then we'd work for a few hours, eat lunch, take a break, and then we'd work again until meditation in the evening, and then we'd go to bed. One thing that we also did was about once a week, the teacher or the abbot of the Crestone Mountain Zen Center, his name is Baker Roshi, he would give a talk, and he splits his time between a place in Germany and a place in Crestone. So he was in Germany at the time, so we would have to Zoom in. So we would Zoom into his lectures. And because I was familiar with it, and they didn't have a whole lot of hands who were familiar with electronics and computer stuff, I ended up taking on that role for a little while. So I was in charge of setting up the Zoom, setting up the cameras. So there was one night where we were working with a new computer, because someone who normally we use their computer was gone for that day for whatever reason. So I had kind of gotten familiar with the gig. I did okay. You know, at the beginning I messed up maybe one or two small things, but this is a month in to me doing this, and I'm setting up the computer, and pretty quickly I realized that there's a problem. I don't know the password for the Zoom account. So to cut to the chase, I'm, you know, frantically like looking at all the computers, like trying to log in, looking for passwords. And finally I get it, but we log in like 3 minutes late. So that's the start of the meeting. Then the camera falls off the place where it's mounted while the speaker is talking. And then after I put it back up, it keeps drooping down a little bit. I keep having to fix it. And then finally, the magnum opus, to like the, you know, the perfect moment of failure was someone was asking a question from our group, and on the computer a window pops up that's like, okay, you have like 10 minutes and the battery might die. And then the window disappears and the computer dies because I had forgotten to plug it in, and the computer was old, so it just goes like that, and we take another 5 minutes to show up, you know. And it was in the middle of someone's question, and I'm like, oh man, I'm losing my mind at this point. So that was pretty fun. And you know, by the end of it, I'm like, I'm really just welling up with tears, like, oh gosh, I totally screwed up. But sure enough, you know, at the end and after the fact, after we all bow out and the lecture ends and everything is over, there's no one comes up to me and is like, you know, like, you really dropped the ball on that one, you know. There's also not a whole lot of, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, patting me on the back and saying like, you know, you did a really good job, but there was neither. It was just left to be, you know, it was left to be what happened that night. And it was, God, it was terrible. It felt pretty awful at first, but, it was an interesting lesson, you know? So yeah, you might be noticing a theme. Like this was something that was consistent throughout, is that whenever a mistake would happen at the monastery, and there were a lot of mistakes, you know, there was me putting dishes back in the wrong place in the kitchen, washing the dishes incorrectly somehow, washing them too slowly. That was something I definitely did. These guys work really, really fast, despite being at a Zen monastery. Little things like that, in addition to the bigger things like messing up the Zoom lecture or really messing up during the bows and things like that. There was never, the response was never excessive. It was exactly, it was just what needed to be said. There was nothing extra in the response ever. It was always like, if it seemed like I knew that I had made a mistake, no one would say anything. And if maybe I didn't know and I needed to be corrected, someone would give me a kind of a little bit of a push. And in those moments where I really felt like I was not doing well and I felt like I was failing totally, and that was clear to other people that I was really getting down on myself, there were times where people stepped in and were like, hey, you know, you're doing a good job. But it was just the amount to, you know, it left those mistakes just to hang, to be as completely, like, leave them bare out for me to see and out for, they were just what they were. So yeah, I guess that was really the main thing I wanted to talk about today was really this aspect of failure at the monastery, was that it left me with the question, especially coming back now to, you know, a layman's life or something, I don't know, something like that, coming back to college, basically. It's left me with like a new sense of what it is to fail and how to approach it, or at least with the question of how do I treat my failures? Because, you know, when I'm here, when I'm at college, it's a really different container. It's like, not only am I'm failing just as much, you know, I'm making just as many small mistakes. But unlike at the monastery, there's not as much space around everything and there's not as much consistency. So when you fail in a monastic schedule or you fail, yeah, when you fail in a monastic schedule, you see that, you know, the past week has been the same thing every day, right? And then you fail and you see that failure as so distinct from the rest of the day. And the way your mind moves becomes so clear against that blank canvas that you're so familiar with. So being back at college when everything is like moving 100 miles a minute and there's so many other people around, like it's so easy to just not pay attention. It's left me wondering, you know, how do I approach these failures? And it seems like the nugget of wisdom that I've been given, along with many, many others, and the feeling of it from staying at the monastery, staying at Crescent Mountain Zen Center, has just been that, you know, there's great value in taking space and taking time to meditate, taking time to add nothing extra, you know, just to leave the things as they are, not to negotiate with, you know, oh, next time I'll do way better and that will make it up to everyone. But, you know, that's not the point, really. It's like just to, just to kind of let it hang. You know, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know how to say more than that. It's more of a feeling than a something I can put into words eloquently. And you know, so yeah, I guess that's what I'll say for now. I think I wish I had a nice koan or something to tie it up, but I'm sure you guys have plenty. So, and I'd love to hear questions. You know, it was challenging because, you know, it's hard to explain 2 months in a Zen Threads talk. So I didn't try at all. I just decided I was better off just telling a little bit of a story. So yeah, thank you all.